Welcome in, everyone, to another episode of the Double Dribble Podcast, your source for all things Alabama basketball. And I'm your host, Jordan Harper, head basketball analyst of Tide Illustrated of the Rivals Network. You can also find me on Twitter at HarperNation24. And I just got back today, from Phoenix of attending the Final Four games, UConn, Alabama, Purdue, NC State. And it was a great weekend. And it's a very tiring weekend when you go out on Saturday morning, leaving Nashville at 11 a.m., getting to Phoenix just an hour and a half before tip-off of the Purdue game, go to your Airbnb, drop off your stuff, and then drive 30 minutes to the stadium and pass Fran McCaffrey, Iowa head coach, Ed Cooley, Georgetown head coach. On the way in, got to meet Emeka Okafor, Richard Hendricks, Chuck Davis. So, you know, it was kind of an awesome experience for someone that grew up watching these guys play basketball and coach basketball for a long time. But ultimately got there about 10 minutes after tip-off of the Purdue-NC State game. But what a ride this has been for Alabama basketball. Now, it didn't end the way everyone wanted it to, but to make it all the way to the Final Four, to give UConn probably their best game, actually not probably, it was their best full game in the NCAA tournament, losing 86-72. And it was tied up with 12:44 to go. Alabama was right there, but this UConn team is just an absolute wagon. They come at you in waves. They have five guys that will all probably get drafted in this upcoming NBA draft this summer, and two of those being lottery picks. And those two lottery picks, Stephon Castle and Donovan Clingan, were the difference in this game. Just no answer for either one of them. And we'll get to breaking down this game. If you're new to the podcast, I appreciate you listening into this this episode. And I would really appreciate you subscribing on whatever platform you listen on. We're available on all platforms that podcasts are available. But Alabama lost 86-72 to the national champion UConn Huskies, who just finished off Purdue. And Alabama definitely gave them their best game. Alabama was nip and tuck with them. They actually led for 4 minutes of this game, which I believe is the longest they've trailed this whole tournament, close to being combined. And I don't know that stat off the top of my head, but I remember seeing something to where they haven't trailed by more than one possession all tournament. And I believe that this was the longest they've trailed in a game all NCAA tournament. And I said it in the preview last week that Alabama would give UConn fits. Their pace that they play at, the style, the amount of threes that they put up. Now, they did shoot well below their average and give UConn a lot of credit for that. But they were hitting at a very, very high clip in the first half, shooting 8 of 11 from three-point land and was still down 4 points. Now, that was very uneasy if you're an Alabama fan watching that. You knew if Alabama could shoot 8 of 11 from three in the first half, over 50% from the field in the first half, you would feel pretty good about this, but pretty much any team in the country that you face. But this is the UConn Huskies, who is absolutely dominant, and it doesn't matter how you play. They can match it. They can match playing fast. They're a lot better, slow, methodical, run their sets. And you can speed them up, and they can make some mistakes. They can kind of rush some shots, which I felt like Alabama forced into them. And that's kind of how they hung around in the first half and the first half of the second half as well, and led, because Alabama was hitting shots. And if you hit shots, it puts a lot of pressure on the other team, and you can have a lot of success. And I felt like Alabama did in the first half. I mean, Mark Sears didn't play particularly well most of the first half, and Alabama was still leading at times. If you follow the game flow wherever you choose to, I mean, Alabama was nip and tuck, really close with them all the way through until the 12:44 mark where they tied it. And then in the blink of an eye, UConn was on an 8-0 run, and it never got within six after that. UConn kind of pulled away at the end. It was still an 8-point game with about 4 minutes, 3 minutes and some change left. But UConn was just too much. And we'll jump into the stats for the final time this year. Hard to believe, and I appreciate everyone being on this ride with me all the way through this season for the fifth season of this podcast, going through every single game. But just jumping right in, Alabama shot 44% overall from the field, rounded up to 45. It's 44.8, but UConn shot 50% overall. They did take four more shots than Alabama, which Alabama typically leads every game in shot attempts. But in this game, UConn, you know, they won the offensive board battle 12-8. They got a lot of second chance opportunities. But Alabama hung right there. I mean, shooting 45% on this team is remarkable considering what most teams shoot in the 20s and 30s this tournament. But Alabama held strong on the offensive end against a lot larger and more athletic group defensively that they've gone up against probably all season. They shot 11 of 23 overall from the field, 47.8%. UConn did hit 10 of 25 from three, and I feel like that was the difference. If UConn could match Alabama's three-point shooting, it was game over because there was no chance that Alabama would win in the paint. They lost 38 to 26 in that battle, but if UConn could match or come close to matching even Alabama from three-point land, it was just going to be a uphill battle the whole way, and that's really what it felt like. Being in the stadium, experiencing the crowd and kind of the momentum shifts throughout the game, it never felt like Alabama was in control. Even when they were up five early, I mean, it was really early, but even when they were up five, it just felt like UConn's going to make a run. UConn's going to make a run. And every time you thought that they would, or at least when I thought, they did. Now, what kept Alabama in it was they matched every one of those runs they had until the very end. UConn would go on a 7-0 run. Alabama would go on a 9-2 run. UConn would go on a 7-0. Alabama would go on a 7-0. It was just back and forth, and it was such fun basketball to watch. And it was just something that always felt like Alabama was one step behind. And UConn always had control, even though it was a close game for 75-80% of the game. UConn is just that good. You can play your best, and your best might not be good enough. I said in a thread earlier last week that Alabama's going to have to play an A, probably A-plus game, and UConn's going to have to play a B or a C game for Alabama to win. Now, I thought UConn probably played a B-plus game for them, and most teams are not going to beat them on a B-plus game. They're not. And the fact that Alabama hung with them is remarkable as well. What looked like it was going to be a huge disparity early on ended up not being that bad, but Alabama shot 9 of 11 from the free throw line. UConn shot 14 of 18 overall. At one point, UConn was up 18 to 5 or 16 to 5 in free throws. Now, Alabama didn't foul at the end of the game, so it kind of went pretty quick, and UConn didn't run up the foul shot disparity. But overall, it was a well-called game for the most part. I didn't like how it was being officiated inside. I thought that UConn was pushing way too much, and they were pushing on the perimeter. They were holding Mark Sears a lot on the perimeter and wasn't being called. You know, typically referees swallow their whistle around this time of year, which, you know, I understand from both perspectives. You want the refs to kind of stay out of the way. But you're going to have to call the game fairly. Not saying that this game wasn't called fairly overall, but you're supposed to call it like any other game, is what I'm trying to say. And, you know, they ultimately swallowed their whistles for the most part. There was only 32 fouls called in the whole game. It was 17 to 15, with UConn having actually more fouls than Alabama. But it was all the non-calls that I felt like were kind of egregious, you know. Grant Nelson's posterizing dunk on Donovan Clingan. Didn't get a foul called there. That was pretty obvious. You know, like I mentioned, Mark Sears was getting held off the ball a lot, and that's kind of why he couldn't get going early on. There were a lot of non-calls that I felt like were missed, but, I mean, it's the Final Four. you kind of have to play through it, as bad as I hate to say that, but you kind of have to play through it. And the refs aren't going to implement themselves too much. So I'm not going to harp on all that for too much because, I mean, the game's over. There's no point in pointing out officiating at all. But UConn won 37-28 in the rebounding battle, 12-8 in offensive boards, 25-21 in defensive boards. And here is where it shows that UConn was just a machine offensively. Now, they scored 86 points, but 20 assists on 31 made buckets. That's typically what Alabama does. Now, Alabama only had 9 assists on 26 made shots. And it's pretty incredible that Alabama only made 26 shots. They're typically in the 35 range, up to close to 40. But UConn is the number 4 defensive team in the country for a reason, and they really made it tough for Alabama on the perimeter to get anything easy, especially in the second half. First half, they were kind of getting some scramble plays, and they made some good buckets. Aaron Estrada was terrific from deep. Latrell Reitzel was obviously really good, and Mark Sears as well. But UConn was just overpowering on the perimeter with their length and their size and their athleticism. Just couldn't get anything going in the second half. I believe they shot 3 of 11 or 2 for 10 in the second half from 3 after going 8 of 11 overall in the first half. It was a pretty clean game overall. I was very surprised. Alabama only had 8 turnovers. UConn had 4, so that was really good to see. There was only 2 fast break points scored the whole game, and that was by UConn. The fact that Alabama scored 0 fast break points is absolutely incredible and indicative of UConn getting back defensively every single time. They were not going to let Alabama outrun them. So anytime there was a 3 shot by Klingon or not Klingon, but Spencer or a Caravan, they were getting back whoever was back and preventing that. But you have such great rebounders inside, like Klingon. Caravan even crashes the boards a lot from the outside. And their guards rebound very well. So the 2 closest to the basket will go in and be pesky rebounders and could get some offensive boards. But the 2 guys or 3 guys back in their half courts getting back, they're preventing any fast break points and making Alabama score in the half court. And that's ultimately how you have to defend Alabama. You can't let them get into a running match, or Alabama is going to win that 9 times out of 10. Now, the largest lead UConn had was 16. The largest Alabama had was 5. And that 16-point lead was really, really late. And, I mean, as an Alabama fan, you have to appreciate greatness that UConn is. You have to appreciate the effort that Alabama put in to make this game a very competitive game. And the one thing that I will say is that Alabama proved that they belong up there in the top echelon of teams. They did. If they can hang with UConn on one of the biggest stages in college basketball I'll just be flat out honest, they're a vastly under-talented team compared to UConn. To make it that close, one, it goes to show the preparation that Nate Oates and the staff made, and how much guts and, I mean, I hate to say it, but Alabama's team is just, they play so hard that they make up for a lot of lack of size. They don't have much size on the backcourt. They don't have much size on the front court. But they play so hard and gritty. And I hate saying that for a team just because you're taken away from their talent and how good they are. But it's true that this team has never been out of any game this season. There's never been a game this season where you're like, okay, Alabama is toast. Even the Kentucky game, when they went down 20, they started making runs and they just kept scoring at will. It's just that they couldn't stop a nosebleed that game or any of the Florida games. While they did get blown out, you always thought a run was coming. You thought that they were going to get back into it just because of how well they score and how well they fight. And this NCAA tournament goes to show they trailed late in every single game and came back to win four of them to make it to the Final Four. So let's go to the box score, look at some individual performances, starting with Alabama. Obviously, the player of the game was Mark Sears. I mean, just incredible, incredible, incredible performance on the biggest stage. 24 points on 9 of 14 shooting, 3 of 6 overall from 3, 5 boards, 3 assists. If this is his last game, and I'll kind of touch on the roster situations coming up on who I think's leaving, who I think's staying. But if this is the last game that Mark Sears plays, what a legacy he left in his final year. I mean, just incredible. I hate that he didn't make the all-tournament team. I felt like he should with his performance, but understandably, Zach Edey was one, and then the other four were four of UConn starters. So hard to complain there. But Mark Sears was incredible, and they were defending him very well, albeit holding him a lot of the game. But he fought through it. He made some huge threes. He made some incredible acrobatic layups. He looked every bit of an NBA player, in my opinion. Take away the size, pound for pound, I think he is one of the best guards in college basketball, if not the best. So I could definitely see him making an impact in the league. And like I said, I'll touch on him in a second when I go through the roster situations. Grant Nelson as well. If this is his last game, what a performance in this game as well as the North Carolina game where he came up huge. He finished with 19 points, 15 rebounds, had a big block of Klingon. Him and Stevenson both got a block on Klingon that game. But he finished 7-16 shooting from the field, hit the first bucket of the game from three, and that kind of opened it up for Alabama, I think. It looked like they were letting Grant shoot a little bit, and after he made that three, they kind of tightened up. But what an emphatic dunk he had that's most certainly going to be on one shining moment whenever that's being played tonight. But what an absolute, I mean, ESPN top play, whatever you want. It's a highlight reel that he's going to play over and over probably for the rest of his life, because that is one that is super impressive on that stage. Probably the first posterizing dunk I remember seeing in the Final Four, and I couldn't tell you the last one I saw. But he was really good on Klingon overall. He really fought, and he tied the game up with 12:44 left, backing down Caravan, using his size. I mean, he was very methodical in what he was doing, and he battled on the boards. That's what Alabama needed, and that's kind of the thing that everybody worried about was how was Pringle and Nelson and Stevenson going to handle rebounding against Klingon and Johnson down low. But they held their own. Nelson was a monster on the boards. And him and Mark Sears and Aaron Estrada, who scored 13 points on 5 of 11 shooting, were the reasons why Alabama made it so close. I mean, that big three, all three transfers, Estrada and Nelson was this past offseason. Sears was 2 years ago. I mean, what an impact they made in their time in Alabama. Now, Estrada's obviously gone. Grant, Mark, they have a decision to make. But incredible legacy that they all three left at Alabama, regardless of when they leave. Rylan Griffin had 8 points, 3 of 8 shooting overall. Didn't really do anything stat-wise, but he hit a couple big threes in the game. Nick Pringle didn't do much overall. I thought he fought really well against Klingon. It was just he's not well at moving his feet at all, and he just gives up so much size to Klingon that it was really hard to play him. And the only guys that got points off the bench was Latrell Reitzel, who went 2 of 3 from three-point land. He had a block as well. So there was not much bench production, which is something that Alabama really thrived with most of the SEC play, of having guys like Walters or Stevenson or Latrell Reitzel they've never had big games together, but there was always one guy off the bench that had a big game that kind of helped propel or carry Alabama at times, and that just never really happened. Latrell Reitzel played 31 minutes in this game. And the other three guys, Walter Stevenson, Diabate, played a combined 20 minutes. So that lets you know that Nados was just going to ride with his starting five and play small most of the time with Reitzel in there with Estrada and Sears and was just going to let it fly. But unfortunately, UConn is just so long and they had nobody under 6'5 in their starting lineup. And the only guy that, you know, Diarra was the only guy that came off the bench that, you know, equalized their smaller backcourt. So it made everything that Alabama did on the perimeter really tough. But give them all credit. They really played hard that game. But kind of scan over UConn's, which is just absolutely stacked. In the starting five, you had Stephon Castle, who went off for 21 points, 5 boards, 2 assists on 7 of 13 shooting. And Alabama dared him to shoot threes early on. He hit 2 quick ones and went 0 for 4 the next time, or the next 4. So that plan worked for the most part. It did get UConn off to a fast start. Tristan Newton was another guy they let shoot threes. He went 3 of 9. I think he hit 1 of his first 5 and then kind of finished a little stronger near the end of the game. He ended up with 12 points. Cam Spencer had 14. Donovan Klingon had 18. And Alex Caravan had 14. Everybody scored 12 or more in the starting lineup. I mean, just an absolute buzzsaw of a team. I mean, they come at you in waves. They never let you rest. And they only got 7 points from Samson Johnson off the bench. And he only played 10 minutes. And Jalen Stewart only played 7. And Hassan Diarra only played 23. So they play heavy with their starting lineup as well. And that starting lineup's all going to be drafted this offseason or this NBA draft. So kind of tell you how good they are overall. So just kind of wrapping up this game. UConn's a buzzsaw. Alabama played hard. Wasn't enough. Alabama's, you know, B-plus game against UConn's B-plus game. Well, there you go. 13-14 point difference. So Alabama finished the season 25-12. And the Final Four, for the first time in program history, now comes the drama. The uncertainty, the uneasiness for Alabama fans, not knowing what's going to happen next. Well, I'll tell you one thing. I didn't get a lot of sleep last night because I had to be up at 2 a.m. Pacific time to get on my flight at 5 a.m. But at 9 o'clock or maybe 8 o'clock Pacific time, I can't remember exactly when it dropped, but John Calipari was reportedly leaving Kentucky to go to Arkansas. Now, it's kind of been up and down since then. Hasn't really been, you know, officialized yet through the universities. A lot of back channeling going on, a lot of paperwork, I'm sure, contract work, lawyer work. But that's going to happen. So John Calipari is going to be at Arkansas, which leaves a University of Kentucky head coaching job open for basketball. Now, this is where it all got kind of worrisome for Alabama fans. Probably Greg Byrne as well. Nate Oates, you knew was going to be top 5 or top, maybe even top 3 in wish lists for Kentucky. I mean, his name was one of the first that came out, along with Scott Drew and Billy Donovan and Dan Hurley. So you knew that Nate Oates was going to be called and asked. And, you know, it kind of went quiet there. There were some reports that he's not interested, it's not going to happen. Well, this afternoon, supposedly, from what I've heard, that Kentucky did reach out to Nate Oates, and reportedly they're offering $8 million a year in salary plus $5 million in NIL to build a roster. That is as appealing as it gets for a college basketball coach. And at Kentucky, they'll give you whatever you want as long as you win. And that's why Calipari stayed 15 years, because he won a lot early on. It's just kind of soured the last 5 years, going 1-4 in tournament play. But Nate Oates ended up reaffirming that he is committed to the University of Alabama. He feels like he can get what he wants there to succeed. He's shown that he can take a football school like Alabama to a Final Four. He's shown that he has the ability to lead them to a national championship. And I have no doubt that Greg Byrne, the boosters, all the NIL backers are going to give Nate what he wants that he feels like he needs to succeed. He went to Twitter tonight to reaffirm that, so that eased a lot of Alabama fans' minds. But now he has some roster decisions to make. Now, the only guy that does not have roster eligibility anymore, college eligibility, is Aaron Estrada. He's used up all of his college eligibility, so he will be gone. But you can basically take his spot and replace it with Houston Millett. I haven't discussed him much, mainly because he was going through an NCAA tournament run and he committed right before the first game. So I just kind of went through all of the tournament scenarios, the game recaps, previews, and I was going to touch on this after the season. So when you talk about Houston Millett, he's a guy from Pepperdine that he's a 6'5" guard. He's really, really long. He has defensive potential, but he's mainly very effective for his offense. So he averaged 14 points per game last year at Pepperdine, 41% from three. And I've talked to his dad, and he told me that Houston is so excited that when he got the call from Preston Murphy, who also recruited him while Preston was at Creighton, before all the FBI stuff kind of came out and he was let go, he was recruiting Houston to Creighton. So he was very familiar with Houston. The Millettes were very familiar with Preston. So once they called, Preston and Nate Oates called, Houston knew that was where he was wanting to go. He had probably 50, 60 teams reach out to him overall. It was a very hot commodity once he hit the portal. But he took a visit right before the NCAA. They left to the West Coast to go play the College of Charleston. Loved it. Ended up committing, I believe, two days later. It's been a while since I can't remember the exact timeline, but committed shortly after. I'll say that much. He's super excited to be there, and he's going to be a key piece next year. Especially losing Aaron Estrada. He's a lot like a taller Latrell Reitzel. He's a guy that you can just put out on the three-point line. He can create his own shot from three. He's very agile with that. He's a great creator as well. He played some point at Pepperdine, so he's going to add another ball handler that they desperately need, losing Aaron Estrada, possibly losing Mark Sears. So Houston Millett essentially takes Aaron Estrada's roster spot, so you can kind of cancel that out. Kai Spears was on scholarship this season, so I imagine that scholarship will be open as well. So that opens up one spot. Then you have three recruits coming in that make up a top six class in the country, and five stars, Aiden Sherrill and Darion Reed, and then four-star, former number one player in the country, Naz Cunningham. So let's walk through this roster, considering that they're going to be two spots over the limit, assuming, you know, the scholarship from Kai doesn't carry over to next year, and assuming everyone stays that can. So that puts them two over the limit. With that, you're going to have at least two players transfer. So let's kind of dive into the roster and see who may come back. I'll say this, who I think will come back and who I think will end up leaving, whether it be transfer or going to the NBA draft. Starting off with Nick Pringle, one guy that everybody's kind of wondering about. Alabama's very thin on the front court, especially at the center position, albeit he is not a true center. He did play a lot of the five spot this season, He is, 6'10". He's a bigger kid, super athletic, as we all have seen throughout his career, being at Alabama the past 3 years. But he's played 18 minutes a game, averaged 6 points, 5 rebounds. Not good defensively. He's had some big games in the NCAA tournament, having 16 and 11 against Clemson, which is his biggest game. He's had some bigger games against lower competition. But overall, Nick Pringle has been more of a detriment to the team in terms of his attitude throughout the season. It's been just been up and down. Not saying he's a bad kid. He is a very good person. It's just sometimes he lets the emotions get the best of him. And throughout the year, he hasn't come out and been suspended, quote unquote. But he's been someone that has, obviously frustrated Nate Oates and the staff. And he sat out 1 to 2 games this year due to things that happened in practice, kind of his attitude and his effort. So with that relationship that the relationship's kind of soured. But in the tournament, he has played so well on both ends of the floor for majority of those games. It's kind of changed some people's perspective on should he leave or should he come back for another year, because he has shown the ability to be a better leader in these games. But to me, I think he's pretty much gone. I think the writing's been on the wall most of the season. I think the relationship has just kind of ran its course. It's soured over time. And to be honest, there's just really not a spot for him in the rotation, just because, one, he can't shoot. Two, he's dependent solely on alley-oops. He's not great catching the ball off the bounce. He turns it over quite a bit for a guy that plays in the paint majority of the time. So I see him leaving personally. I see him transferring out, using his last year of eligibility to go somewhere else, and wish him the best if so. I mean, I've enjoyed watching him. He's had some fun moments, but ultimately I think Alabama can find someone that fits the system better and will give them a lot more productive minutes than what Nick Pringle has. Next up is Grant Nelson. So that if Nick Pringle does leave, that leaves Alabama one spot over the limit. Grant Nelson. This is going to be one person that is going to be highly debated on whether he should stay or whether he should leave. He does have, I believe, 1 year of eligibility left. And, he had a really good up and down year. I'll say that. Not a really good year, not a bad year, but a really good up and down year. He's had great moments. He's got bad moments. A lot of the good moments came in the NCAA tournament. One against UNC, once against UConn. The others, he was just non-existent. Didn't play much at all. Couldn't play him much because he'd get in foul trouble, or he was just not productive. And that, I feel like that's been Grant all season. Is you see the potential. He flashes it so much. It's just he couldn't put it all together. Early in the non-conference, he really showed out against the lower teams that he's used to playing at North Dakota State. But once he got in the SEC, it just felt like he was shell-shocked. He was getting pushed around. He couldn't control himself when it came to fouling. He would reach. He would, not go vertical. He would fall for pump fake. He was going for everything. He looked like an amateur out there in SEC play. But he has a decision to where he is 6'11". He's 230 pounds. He doesn't shoot the three well. He's got extreme athleticism, as you've seen in the dunk against Donovan Clingan. I mean, you're not going to get much more athleticism out of a 6'11 forward/center. But it's either college or pro for him. And I personally don't see him getting drafted in the NBA. But to my knowledge, when he came to Alabama, it was pro or bust for him. I was told that he wasn't going to stay longer than a year. And I still believe that. I think he's gone. I know he kind of left the door open with his quote after the game. A lot of people say stuff in the heat of the moment that, you know, leaves the door open, which is perfectly fine. Nate Oates and staff would welcome him back with open arms if he did decide to come back. I just feel like he is going to move on and go to the pros, whether that's, you know, the G League, if he gets a deal there, or if he goes overseas. I just think that it has run its course with Grant in college, and he's ready to, you know, move on to the next phase. And that's perfectly fine. I enjoyed watching him at Alabama. And if that was his last game against UConn, like I mentioned before, it was an awesome game to add to his 1 year legacy at the University of Alabama. So I think Grant is gone, and that would make Alabama right at the limit. So roster's full, moving ahead to the next player, which is going to be the second most debated player, which is Mark Sears. Mark Sears grew up in Muscle Shoals, which I live in Florence, spent a lot of time in Muscle Shoals working, and I've watched Mark play basketball since probably eighth or ninth grade, when him and his dad, Chad, would go to the Y, put up a lot of shots, and little did I know watching a short, scrawny kid and his dad shooting hoops would end up being one of the most decorated players in Alabama basketball history and could be a potential NBA draft pick. But that just goes to show you, no matter how small you are, if you're not athletic, if you're not fast, hard work never loses. Okay, it always wins. And him finishing with 21 points, 4 rebounds, 4 assists, average on 43.6% three-point shooting, and he shot a lot of them. Just incredible percentages and a 50% field goal percentage for a high-volume shooting guard. It's absolutely incredible. Not to mention he did average 1.6 steals per game. But in NCAA tournament, he finished with 24, 23, 26, 30, and 18. Just incredible. There's not enough words to be able to say how awesome Mark Sears has been for Alabama. But I think he is going to get drafted now after raising his stock to the level that he has in the NCAA tournament. I don't see him not getting drafted. I think at this point he'll be a second-round pick. People want to point the comparison to Jalen Brunson. I mean, he's a lefty. He's shorter. He's stocky. But other than that, I feel like they play different games. But I could see the similarity in terms of being drafted middle of the second round. And Mark might be middle to late second round, but I think he's going to get drafted after his stock has just skyrocketed in the NCAA tournament. And being on the biggest stage in college basketball will do that. So I feel like he's going to end up leaving, going to the NBA draft, and force Alabama to find another point guard. Next, now Alabama is one under the limit. Alabama next player is going to be Rylan Griffin. I don't think there's any worries that Rylan Griffin's going to leave. He has expressed how much he loves Alabama, how much he loves Nate Oates, calling him the GOAT after games. He's a key piece to this team and has been the past 2 years. And I feel like I thought this year would be a breakout year for him. While he did have a very solid year, averaging 11 points on 39% shooting from three, 45% shooting overall, that he can even take a step further offensively, because defensively he's there. He's a great, great perimeter defender. He's long, 6'6", put on some more muscle, and he's going to be a great 3-and-D wing next season and could potentially work himself into being drafted. So I don't see Rylan Griffin transferring at all. He's one of probably the safer players to return, in my opinion. Muhammad Diabate. Now, the guys like Muhammad Diabate, Sam Walters, Muhammad Wagi, these guys, they are, it's tough to gauge with them just because they played sparingly. Diabate especially, he didn't play hardly at all most of the season. He came on and played a lot of minutes against Grand Canyon and College of Charleston just because, you know, they are, while they're good mid-majors, they're still mid-major talent, and he showed that he can play at that level. He's a very solid player. It's just that he cannot shoot. You know, he shot 9% from three. He did 47% overall from the field. I mean, he only averaged 7 minutes a game. So it's really hard to gauge with him. I really hope he doesn't leave. I think that while Herb Jones in his freshman year, he could not shoot a lick. He was more developed than Muhammad Diabate was. But Diabate still has a similar frame, while shorter, being 6'7". He's thicker. He's still got a long wingspan. He's an excellent on-ball and off-ball defender. It's just if they could unlock something offensively with him, he could be a very dangerous piece for this team. Will he leave? I'm going to say no. I think Nate Oates loves him, so I don't think he's going to push him out. If he leaves, it's because Muhammad Diabate wanted to leave, in my opinion. But honestly, I think that he really likes it at Alabama. Nate Oates likes him at Alabama. So I personally think that he's going to stay around. Jared Stevenson, another guy that, you know, throughout the conference play, you know, with Nick Pringle being out some games, he had to kind of step into a role of being playing the five, sometimes playing the four and sometimes the five. And he played out of position a lot, but he's a kid that can take over a game in a heartbeat. And you saw it against Clemson, 19 points. He made 4 of 5 from three. So I don't see Jaren Stevenson going anywhere. He has said that he's really liked it at Alabama, and you know, you can see him enjoy playing with the guys that he's played with and just being at Alabama in general. He's not going to get a better opportunity to showcase his talents as, you know, a 6'11 four man than at Alabama. I feel like, he just turned 18 this year, so he should have been in high school. So to use that year, mature, he's going to get bigger and stronger this offseason. He's going to actually have a full offseason in the weight program and getting into the shooting regimen that they have. And I think Jaren Stevenson could have a monster year next year for Alabama. So I definitely think Jaren Stevenson is one of those safer players, along with Rylan Griffin, that I don't see going anywhere. Sam Walters, 6'10 freshman forward. You know, he's kind of in the Mo Diabate, you know, stratosphere in terms of playing sparingly a lot. He only played a lot of minutes in certain matchups. He was only in there to shoot threes, and because he's not a very good defender, he's actually a pretty bad defender. He is 6'10", 6'9", forward that can run. He's pretty athletic for his size, and he's an excellent three-point shooter. I mean, he's a 40% three-point shooter, averages close to 3 to 4 attempts a game. So anytime that you can come off the bench and hit 2 threes every single game, I mean, that's something that Nate Oates is going to want on his bench for sure. And you can tell that Nate Oates loves the kid. He's hard on him. He coaches him hard because he sees the potential. When he was recruiting him, he made sure to go see him a lot to ensure that he could keep him and land him and keep him. That kind of goes to show how much he really liked him. And I don't see Sam going anywhere. If he leaves, it's because Sam wanted to go find a different opportunity. Will he find a better opportunity than in Alabama? I don't think so. I mean, he could probably play more other places, but to be on a high-profile top 15 team and to get 15 to 20 minutes a game next season, once he gets bigger and stronger, I feel like that's going to be a situation where he is going to thrive. And if he can just get stronger, get thicker, put on some weight, I mean, he could be a viable average defender. And that's really what he needs. He's just poor right now. He can get on and he can shoot the ball, that's for sure. He spreads the floor really good. And being 6'10", that helps a ton. So, personally, I think Sam will end up staying. So that still keeps Alabama one under the scholarship limit. Going on to Latrell Reitzel Jr., who has been the biggest surprise on the season for Alabama, just because of how freakishly good he was shooting the three this year, shooting 44%, one of the best in the nation. He had some head injuries that kind of plagued him this year, especially in the tournament. But he's a guy that I have no worries at all about leaving. I think he's definitely going to stay. I believe he has one more year of eligibility. He would, quite frankly, I think he would be dumb to leave just because of how many shots he's going to be able to put up in the system next year. With Aaron Estrada gone, it's a clear path for Latrell Reitzel to start at the two and play 30-plus minutes and get up as many shots as he wants. So I think it's going to be a prime opportunity for Latrell to be a viable piece next year, especially if Mark Sears leaves, like I think he will. He's going to be one of the guys that's going to be, they're going to lean on for scoring. So I'm going to say Latrell Reitzel is going to end up staying. Muhammad Waghee, guy that played very sparingly. He only played 2 minutes or 15 minutes, 3 minutes, 2 minutes, 1 minute. Didn't play at all in UConn. Now, this reminds me of late last year when guys like Jaden Bradley was just, the minutes just went south for him when it came to tournament time. Guys that lose that many minutes and don't play hardly at all in these games, it kind of shows me that they don't trust them. Even in some of the games that, you know, the matchups were solid, he didn't play. So I think Muhammad Waghee, while he could be solid or a solid player, you know, he's only played 2 years of basketball in college. He's 6'10". He's a bigger kid. It's just that he cannot stop fouling. He's limited offensively, and he's not a good enough rim protector to keep on the team when you can replace him with a guy that's someone that is a viable rim protector, because that is someone that Alabama desperately needs, is a big man that can defend the rim. And Muhammad Waghee isn't it, so I envision that he will end up transferring and put Alabama 2 under the scholarship limit. Now, Davin Cosby Jr., I do not think Davin Cosby sticks around. He's a fun player. He's a fun kid to watch. He's very charismatic. And he's, you know, he's shown that he can be a really good shooter. And he's made a lot of plays in some big games. But there's 13 spots, typically only 8 or 9 play meaningful minutes. And I just feel like he is going to be probably one of the last two players off the bench for scholarship players. And he could go somewhere like Kennesaw State or follow Charlie Henry at Georgia Southern and play a lot of minutes, put up a lot of shots, and I think he could be very successful. I'm not saying that he's Jalen Forbes, but he could go have a career like Jalen Forbes and just shoot a bunch of threes and be successful at the mid-major level. And ultimately, I think Davin Cosby will end up leaving. And when he does, that'll leave Alabama 3 under the scholarship limit, in my opinion. Based off going through the whole roster, I think Alabama will end up 3 under the scholarship limit to go through transfers. Now, who might be some of these transfers that Alabama might go after? So they've already landed Houston Millett. And if Mark Sears leaves, then you're going to see Alabama obviously go after a point guard. So when you look at point guards and who Alabama's going to be going after, there's so many players in the portal that it's really tough to decipher on who they're going to who they're going to prioritize. So I think ultimately at the start, they're going to prioritize going after a big. And Omar Ballo from Arizona, 7'1" rim protector, is going to be a guy that I think Alabama is going to go after. He's going to be very expensive. I could see anywhere between $600,000-$700,000 for Ballo. And, you know, he tortured Alabama earlier this year when Alabama played in Arizona and just protected the rim. And he could be someone that could be a double-double machine in Alabama's system. Just catch lobs, grab boards, and protect the rim and make Alabama an elite team next season once again. So I think Alabama's going to go after a point guard because Mark Sears is gone. I think they're set at the three spot. I think they're pretty set at. The four and the five is where it gets tricky because you've got Jaren Stevenson. If Sam Walters comes back, he'll probably play the 3/4. You have Aiden Sherrill coming in who'll play the 4 and the 5. And then you really need someone to solidify the 5 spot because you have so many tweeners on the team with Stevenson and Walters and Aiden Sherrill that you need that solidified big man on the roster. And I think they'll go out and get one. I think they'll go out and get a bigger wing player, whether that be a 3-4 man. If you know SEC basketball, someone like Cam Matthews for Mississippi State, somebody that's 6'7", 6'8", that's 240, 235. That's just all muscle. That's going to be able to sit down and defend while not being abysmal from outside. I think that will probably be the route they will go. Unless they want to double up at point guard, which they definitely could if they went out and got an experienced point guard. And then they followed it up by going after and getting someone like the USC point guard that just decommitted, Trent Perry. So taking an experienced guy and a young guy and kind of groom the young guy behind them, but have that depth and then go out and get a big man. That could be a way or a situation where I think Alabama could move towards in the transfer portal. So that's going to be something to watch moving forward is who Alabama targets. They've targeted guys like Roddy Gale from Ohio State that decommitted or that's entered the transfer portal. Ballo from Arizona, I've already mentioned. They've only really contacted 4 or 5 guys, which Alabama likes to keep it kind of a secret of who they're targeting. Just from an NIL perspective, they don't want to have the NIL kind of spike. They want to kind of keep it low key with the reporting. But Alabama will be very deliberate, and with this Final Four run, they're going to be very choosy, and they're going to be someone that can really pick and choose who they want, and they can make their way into any situation, anybody's living room to be able to recruit them to transfer to Alabama. I think the NIL is going to get a lot more improved with this Final Four run, and then Nate Oates turning down Kentucky. I think you might see it close to $3 million range for the whole roster. You add that with the Final Four run, you're going to have, and Nate Oates' system, you're going to have a lot of interest from a lot of players in the portal, especially when Nate Oates and staff reach out. And then there's also Austin Clonch leaving to take the UTSA job. So Nate Oates is going to have to hire another assistant. Go figure. So that's 4 assistants in 2 years that's left to take a head coaching job somewhere else. With Ryan Pinon, that was rumored for the Fresno State head coaching job, but he removed his name recently, so he is out of contention there. Still to be seen if he stays overall, but as of now, Nate Oates has 1 assistant coaching spot open to fill this offseason. So it's going to be another busy offseason for Nate Oates and their staff, but it has been a very successful season overall for Alabama and this program. making history, and I don't think the history is going to be done being made anytime soon. I think Alabama, NATO's going to take Alabama to the promised land one day, whether that be next year or the year after or 5 years from now. I feel like Alabama will be in a national championship one day soon in basketball. Sorry for the lengthy podcast. This is probably going to be my last podcast for maybe a week or two, depending on what happens in the transfer portal or players, if they decide to hit the transfer portal or Alabama lands anybody, I'll probably hop on and do a shorter one to kind of break those decisions down. But appreciate everyone hanging to the end of this episode. I appreciate it. Everyone that listens to this podcast, this is the fifth season that I've completed this this podcast. I'm close to 70 episodes now. Hardly feels like it's been 5 years, but time flies when you're having fun, that's for sure. But until next time, I'm Jordan Harper, the host of the Double Dribble podcast, and you can find me on Twitter at HarperNation24 or on Tide Illustrated of the Rivals Network for all your Alabama basketball news. And until next time, signing off for another season. Adios.